What is hate crime? It seems like such an easy term, one that everyone knows and can point out when they see it. But the definition is not as clear-cut as many believe it to be. Put into simpler terms, Canada's Criminal Code defines hate crime as a criminal offense motivated by a real or perceived hatred towards an individual or group based on a part of their identity. In 2022, Statistics Canada released a report on hate crime in Canada. These statistics, which were gathered in 2020, showed the largest recorded number of hate crimes since 2009. And while most of the report covers hate crime that occurs in public places, online occurrences of hate crime were also documented, and were found to have actually increased as well in 2020. This increase took the forms of uttering threats, harassment, and public incitement of hatred, and were most commonly targeted towards Muslim, Black, and Jewish communities. And even though Canada has taken steps to address hate and violent extremism through the creation of a digital charter, modern technology has made it easy to hide your location and identity on the internet, making it difficult to enforce any one country's legislation on social media.
I think that word crime is just so automatically associated with legality.
You know, anybody in the world can have a VPN and post wherever they want without being, like, recognized or not showing their location.
I mean, do I think the laws should be updated to say that intimidation and other forms like that are a criminal act? Absolutely.
Since Canada's definition of hate crime can't apply to the entirety of the internet, we need to find a definition that we can use to understand hate crime as it occurs online. To do this, we can use scholar Barbara Perry's definition. A behavior that involves acts of violence and intimidation, usually directed at an already stigmatized and marginalized group. This definition is more useful than Canada's official one, as it allows us to view hate crime in the same way that most people do. And now that we understand what a hate crime is, we can start to look at how the internet and social media has shaped the way we engage with hate crime online.
You know, when I think in my childhood in the early 2000s, you know, I remember it was very, very easy to come across all sorts of things on the internet, like from casual all the way up to extreme racism, bigotry, homophobia, sexism, the list goes on. It was just kind of a constant thing, you know, the wild west of the internet.
Hale's experience of stumbling onto content on the internet isn't a unique one either. I interviewed my friend Dennis to get his experience. Can you tell me a little bit about how you kind of started getting involved in kind of more right-leaning circle, what you ended up seeing?
I was, I think, 13 and questioning religion, and it was like all these people, like, religion's dumb, and all of the basically saying what I wanted to hear.
And while he was talking about his experience, Dennis kept going back to how easy it was to be accepted by this group.
It's very easy. They often don't check who you are. They don't really care who you are. All they care about is if you have the same beliefs they do, and if you are willing to be educated. As long as you believe what they believe, you're in.
After leaving the Facebook group, Dennis continued to consume atheist content on YouTube, and soon, he started to get recommendations for YouTubers that were more political.
Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, Steven Crowder, and it stopped there.
Dennis's experience is similar to Caleb Kane, who was interviewed by Kevin Roos in the podcast Rabbit Hole to talk about his encounter with right-wing content on YouTube. He first started on the site watching self-help videos and began getting recommended right-wing political YouTubers. Like Dennis, Caleb started watching videos by Steven Crowder and Stefan Molyneux, but unlike Dennis, Caleb didn't stop there. Caleb's YouTube algorithm continued to pull him more and more in until he was fully engaged with and believing alt-right theories such as the Great Replacement Theory and race realism, both of which hinged upon the belief of white superiority. Although Caleb didn't go as far as to act upon these beliefs in the real world, the fact that he was able to cultivate this new identity through a free service like YouTube is troubling on its own. So far, Hale, Dennis, and Caleb have all shown how the internet has made it easier to find and consume media that promotes beliefs that lead to hate crime. Hearing these perspectives have made me think about my own experience with hate crime on the internet and how it shaped the way that I engage with content. As a younger Indigenous woman, I make sure to keep all my accounts private. I try not to engage with internet trolls who I know are only arguing me to make me mad. And I try to be mindful of the information I'm consuming. I know you might be thinking, so Emily, you're telling me that the internet can only make hate crime more accessible? Well, no. In fact, there's been many ways that the internet has been used by groups to gather and combat crime in a way that's never been seen before. In her article, Disrupting the Mantra of Multiculturalism, Hate Crime in Canada, Barbara Perry talks about how the fact of hate crime actually results in people critically engaging with bias and finding ways to educate others about prejudice. I feel as though the internet has just been another way to do this exact thing, except now it's in a way that's able to reach hundreds upon thousands of people. And we saw this happen through the Black Lives Matter movement educating the world about police violence against Black communities in the United States. So how has the internet influenced my understanding of hate crime? I think it's made me realize that there's more nuance than there seems. While yes, the internet can be a place where hate crime is more common, it can also be a place where people learn how to recognize hate crime and find ways to fight against it. With this in mind, I try to stay critical of what I'm consuming on the internet and make sure to take moments to really try to understand the intentions of the content, especially if I feel like it's continuing to confirm my beliefs. By doing this, I can attempt to stay vigilant against algorithms that have led many down extreme paths.